ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रां कृष्णं जगद्गुरु पादपद्मे तयो श्रुत्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः. We are truly very happy to be here today. See how bhakti begins, you can understand right here. We didn't know you, you didn't know us, but a kind of strong aspiration is there within you. So just like that, this has come about. And as a result, we are all here today and discussing bhakti, which is actually the essence of spiritual life. No matter what you are doing, whether you are doing yoga, jnana, whether you are doing Vedanta vichar, the heart of it all is bhakti, because somewhere there is deep feeling for what you should be doing. That feeling is bhakti. You know, even great jnanis like Ramana Maharshi, they used to say, bhakti is jnana mata, mother of jnana. Without bhakti there is no jnana. You must feel intensely about something and spiritual life starts from there. So if you see Thakur Maa Swamiji's life, predominantly what is there? Tell me, it is bhav, isn't it? It's the intense feeling they had. Look at Thakur's life. There are three photos of Thakur available to us. All three photos have Thakur in Samadhi. Not a single photo of Thakur is out of Samadhi. Isn't it? Now how do we understand a man whose perpetual state was Samadhi, unless we ourselves touch it? So devotion is fundamental, intense devotion, the mind flowing unidirectionally towards one particular object. This is fundamental to any path, and lovingly, naturally, spontaneously flowing, not forcefully, not out of control, you are exercising a kind of control, not like that, not due to your willpower. It is flowing by itself, because the object of its attachment is so attractive. It has just got hooked to that object. So this is the state of mind of a yogi, jnani, bhakta, everybody. You just love God. The pull is there. And so the mind is flowing. You know, the definition of bhakti is very beautiful in our shastras. Just now Mataji also gave you the definition. The definition of bhakti, this is how Madhusudan Saraswati describes it. Shrutasya bhagavad dharmad dharavahikam gataha sarvesha manovrittayah bhakti iti abhideyate. Which means, by hearing God's nature, the nature of God, if the mind flows continuously and naturally towards Him, the whole mind, not one vritti, not one modification of the mind. You know, in Raj Yoga, Jnana Yoga also, we are working on modifications of mind. In bhakti, what happens is not one or two modifications, the whole mind rushing towards the Lord. Naturally, you see, when you fall in love, this is what happens, isn't it? You don't have to be told anything about the object. You don't have to focus on the object. The mind is spontaneously rushing towards the object of attachment, the object of love. So when this happens for the Supreme Lord, dharavahikam gataha sarvesha manovrittaya, all the vrittis of the mind together, without your permission, without any other incentive, without any other trigger, when they flow spontaneously towards God, that is bhakti. This should happen naturally. As we lead our spiritual life, as we go on with our day-to-day sadhana, whatever our Guru's instructions have been, as we go on following them, there must come this point in our life when the mind is naturally rushing towards the Divine. Then there is nothing else, no other obstacle. You see, nothing is difficult in this state of mind. Everything becomes easy. God makes everything easy in our life if bhakti enters our life. This spontaneous feeling of intense devotion for the Lord. The primary heart of spiritual life is feeling. Even if you are a jnani, forget about the impersonal aspect and all that. From your standpoint, it is very intense feeling, solidified into a force within your system, which simply takes you towards the goal. So this is something you can cultivate. This is what Bhakti Yoga says. If it is not coming just now, you can cultivate. whatever our other disciplines, they can serve as a means towards this. You know, Thakur used to give this kind of instruction only. Wherever you are placed, whatever you are doing, you can move towards God, you can move towards the higher aspects of spiritual life just by offering whatever you are doing to the Lord. Just by converting that into a yoga. See, many of us are placed like this. Even we don't think we have all time for spiritual practices. Many times we are doing very responsible work for society. Now I have to convert that into a yoga. Your position also is the same. You are doing a particular kind of work, a kind of service to society. You have to convert it into a yoga. This can happen only through bhakti. If I want one particular goal, anything coming my way, I must be able to convert that into a means towards that goal. All this grist that comes to my mill, there's a saying. If I'm running a mill, everything that comes in is grist. So anything comes into my life, my job, my family, my relationships, my love for others, my responsibilities, my duties, everything is a means towards the divine. How to do this? You see, let me give you a simple anecdote from Thakur's life to show you how we can do this practically in our life. This actually happened to a gardener in the Dakshineshwar temple garden. So now let's go back to Dakshineshwar for some time, the next 5-10 minutes. You have to imagine the scene, then only you will understand it. Huh? See, there was this young gardener, a very teenage boy, who was working in the Dakshineshwar temple garden. You know how this incident was unearthed? It's something remarkable. When Swami Vishuddhanandji Maharaj, who was one of the presidents of the order, he started going to Dakshineshwar Kali temple. Of course, they keep going, but once in, I think, 60s or something, 50s or 60s, sometime he was in the temple garden when he saw a very old man picking up agacha, those grass, small grasses, weeds and all which grow. He was picking those weeds, sitting on the path which leads to the Panchavati. You remember that path from Thakur's room to Panchavati? Mm-hmm. That small path. So he's sitting there and picking those weeds one by one, and painstakingly, he can't even sit, he's an old man. And Vishuddhanandji Maharaj went to him and said, why are you doing this? Let the other youngsters do it. You don't sit like this and do it. He told Vishuddhanandji Maharaj, Thakur amake boleche. Thakur has told me to do this. And Vishuddhanandji Maharaj thought he is devotion. So he went back. Again after a few days, same thing he is doing. Sitting and painstakingly in that heat, in the sun, sitting and picking those weeds. Then he came and said, why are you doing it? I can't bear to see you. And he said, Thakur amake boleche, kichu bolbe na apni. Then Vishuddhanandji Maharaj actually cajoled him and forced him to tell the incident. Thakur apnake kobe boleche, what did Thakur tell you? Why are you doing this? And then he said, okay, I will tell you. See, listen, what happened? When I was a young gardener in this Dakshineshwar temple garden, so the story begins like this. When he was that young teenage boy and just entered the temple garden to do the work there, he was very happy. He was close to this saintly person. He had seen Thakur only from a distance, relationship they had. He wouldn't go close to him because he was awestruck always. So from a distance he used to admire him, bow down to him, and he used to do his work throughout the day. One night, it so happened that he did not get sleep in from his quarters. So he came out and he was strolling in the temple garden. It was very hot, and suddenly he saw a light coming from, not Panchavati, from the Beltala. You remember the Beltala? It's quite far from Panchavati. So from there was a light streaming out of that place. And he thought, what is this light? In those days, no electric lights and all that. Huh? From the middle of a forest, a light is coming out. And in this temple garden, from where did such a bright light come? So he slowly went there, noiselessly, as quietly as possible, he made his way there. And he entered that forest and he saw Thakur sitting in deep meditation under the bale tree. And from his body, the glow was coming out in the form of a light. An effulgent form, deep in meditation. As soon as he saw this, he saw Thakur's face was totally effulgent and the glow was coming out of his body. As soon as he saw this, he got frightened. he couldn't proceed further. But it was that glow and that light was blissful. It was not frightful. So after some time he lost his fear, but that sense of awe which he felt, he just thought I shouldn't disturb him, and he quietly went back. And next day, again he was doing his gardening there, and he saw Thakur coming from the Panchavati. And as soon as he saw Thakur coming, he fell at his feet straight. And then Thakur looked at him and said, "Kire, aaj to reto bhakti keno? Why so much devotion today?" And he couldn't say anything, he was just staring like this. And Thakur of course understood, and he said, "Oh, acha, you saw me yesterday in that state. Oi murti rupar dhyan korbi," he said. "Meditate on that form which you saw yesterday, and ei rasta parishkar rakhbi. Keep this path clean. So many devotees will come here. Pick out these weeds, keep this path clean and meditate on that form." You see, this is Thakur's instruction to all of us. Meditate on him. That is the way to develop bhakti. If you concentrate fully on Thakur's form, you will become his. Bhakti will naturally come into you. And keep your path towards him clean. Absolutely committed. Whatever you are doing, whether it is weeding, whether it is engineering, whatever you are doing, anywhere you are placed, it is a path to him. So keep it clean, keep it clear. Do your work as an offering at his feet, and bhakti, jnana, all this will naturally come into your life. This is the instruction Thakur is giving to us through the medium of this incident, through that gardener. And that is why that gardener stuck to his job. Even when he was 70, 80, he would not leave that, because Thakur has told me, keep this path clean and meditate on that image which you saw. So this is the instruction to us also in our spiritual life to develop bhakti, to develop devotion for him. Let me just discuss a few characteristics of this bhakti. What happens to us when this all-consuming love comes into our lives? Don't think you don't have it. It's not that I don't have it and I have to now bring it in from somewhere. You already have it. It is invested in various things. Please see this. This was Prahlad's prayer to Lord Vishnu. You know, that very love which people have invested in the senses, in a job maybe, in acquiring this and that in this life, that united love, let it move towards you. So we already have it. It is spread out into many things. Now as we grow older in life and as we grow up in spiritual life, many times we grow old without growing up. But assuming that we are going to grow up, this love should unite. It should come together. The love that is scattered in various things, now I am going to, spiritual life begins this way, I am going to bring it together and direct it towards this particular goal, towards God. Whatever you understand by that God, bring it together and direct it towards him, bhakti will grow. That's why the nature of bhakti is, you know, sulabha it is called. This is one of the characteristics of bhakti. It is natural. It is easy. Nobody can say, oh, love is a very difficult thing. Loving others might be difficult. Loving God is not difficult. Because others are, you know, another mind in evolution. Another evolving mind. It will have all kinds of complications, all kinds of problems. And you are trying to connect with that mind. So you will also have problems. It's only natural. But loving God is not like that. That's the perfect mind you can connect with. So it is always sulabha. Once you start loving him, you will say it's easy. In fact, bhakti is the easiest path, because our natural tendency is like this, to love. So one of the characteristics of bhakti is sulabha. It is easy. It is swayam pramana. Swayam pramana tvat, it is said in the suttas, which means it is its own proof. What is the proof of love? We never ask that when you are in love, you know, you never ask, what is the proof that I am in love? Your whole mind is flowing towards the object of love. So love is self-evident. It is its own proof. Yeah, the mind is naturally flowing towards God. You are absorbed. You see, absorption is not a masterly yogic state. Absorption is the natural state of your mind. I told you, the mind is just now scattered in too many things. As you withdraw it and turn it towards God, absorption will become your natural state. You are born for that. The human birth is meant for that. In how many words Thakur has said this, isn't it? What is the purpose of human life?
God realization.
The realization of God is the purpose of human life. And what is the very essence of human life, Thakur says? Bhakti Shar, he says. Bhakti Shar Vastu, he says, which means bhakti is the very essence of human life, loving God. All other loves which we have, the relationships which we have made, everything that we have is meant for this. Please see this. It is meant for this. You take these little loves into your life so that to invoke this great fire of love within you, so that it will flow towards the Supreme Lord. That is the purpose of all these things which we are doing. So at some point in our life, this should become clear to us. We must understand the seriousness of this, that this is meant for that, and I will use it towards that purpose. This is the point. Another thing about bhakti which you should know, which forms another characteristic of bhakti is, you see, by definition it is parama prema swarupa, isn't it? But how does it start? It is beautifully described in our scriptures. It is of the nature of bhava vyutpatti karanam. It is of the nature of feeling. It is not willing, it is not knowing, it is feeling. If you feel intensely, the rest will follow. So invoke this pure, intense feeling for God in your life on an everyday basis. You see, the little puja which we do, or chanting, or your satsang, or prayer, bhajan, khandana you might be doing, aarti you might be doing. What is the purpose of all this? To create an intense feeling for the Lord in your mind. So every day if you keep doing this, if the stamp falls every day, then it becomes, you know, neuroplasticity it's called. It becomes a solid neural pathway in your brain. And gradually it becomes easy to love. So on an everyday basis, some prayer, you see, this you must, I'm sure you're doing it because I see your children doing such wonderful things. So I'm sure you're doing it at home. This is the best gift you can give your child, that you are devoted to God. He sees you devoted to God and he picks it up from you. This is the best gift you can give your child. You know, today they call us even for parenting conferences, and I always tell them this. One little girl, when I was in Chennai, every year almost I go to Chennai, one little girl there, she told me, she was also this age, slightly older than this, maybe 5-6 years, and she got initiation. She came and told Maharaj that, you know, my mother, every day morning I see her sitting in the shrine with Japamala in hand, and her face is so beautiful at that time, so satisfied and absorbed. I want that. So beauty, Diksha. How beautiful. So then Maharaj was telling this to us. So you see, this is the best gift you can give your child, that he or she sees you absorbed in God. Then you know his life is made, you know. He knows what to aim at in human life. So these are the little things which we can do to develop bhakti, to bring this into our families, into our everyday life. Another thing is, the nature of bhakti is ananyata, which means it flows one-pointedly towards God. You are using everything else towards that goal. If it bifurcates or if it gets scattered out, after some time, immediately you should be able to understand. No, you can't go towards something which is not its equal. You know, only God is your equal. In the sense, your love, there is only one place where it can find its consummation, and that is in God. So this ananyata comes due to bhakti. And then naturally the vrittis flow towards God. Another thing about love is, you must understand this basic psychological fact, that love is what love does, not what love says of merely. Okay, so seva is a very important part of bhakti. If you are doing something for the object of your love, that is authentic love. If you are not doing anything, then there cannot be any love there. So seva is an essential aspect of love. It, they go together, they go hand in hand. Many times, there's a modern trend, you know, with our young people many times, to keep talking of love and not do anything about it. You know, if you actually go to Vrindavan and all that, you will see, you have first have to do seva for a long time. Our karma yoga also means this. It's a stepping stone to bhakti. It must come in the form of spontaneous service. If you keep doing it, naturally, bhakti will grow in you. This is another important point regarding bhakti. Then another characteristic of bhakti is, you see, if you aim only at what I will get out of it, the happiness I am going to get, the joy I am going to get, oh, you won't get anything much. Happiness is always a byproduct of absorption. If you want to get happiness out of your job, you must leave out happiness from your mind and concentrate on your job. You want to get happiness out of art, you leave be out happiness and concentrate on the work of art. You want happiness out of music, out of cooking, out of anything, you leave aside the joy aspect and concentrate on the work at hand and happiness will follow. This is the nature of joy. It is a byproduct of a very elevated state of mind. You must generate the state through action, through work, and bhakti will follow. So remember, absorption is a very important thing in a devotee's life. Daily absorption on God will generate bhakti. The joy, the happiness, the security, the comfort of bhakti is generated by absorption. And otherwise, you end up only, you know, the hedonistic paradox. I have told this many times in my talks. Since many of you are hearing the talks, you must be knowing this. Hedonic treadmill, it's called. You won't arrive at joy or happiness if this absorption is not there. You will only arrive at pleasure. The nature of pleasure is there is no absorption there, there is no tyag there, there is no renunciation there. It is just trying to take something from, extract something from the other, thus causing pain to the other person. And so it cannot cause any joy to you also. So this is the difference between love and pleasure. The pleasure will put you into that hedonic treadmill and you move away from bhakti actually. So psychologically understand clearly, you see, we are, as devotees today, we must be very smart devotees. We must be intelligent enough to psychologically understand these aspects. What is happening in our mind? Why should I follow this authentic path of bhakti? Because this is the nature of life, this is the nature of the human mind. If I invest my energies in pleasure, I will move away from love. If I invest it in the path of bhakti, I will move towards greater and greater joy and happiness. This discrimination must come into us by ourselves, not because we are telling it here or some scripture says it. This is the psychological aspect of the mind. The bhakta is a master psychologist. He knows what every state leads to. So he chooses the path of love for the Lord. So this is also something you should understand. I just have a few points on characteristics of bhakti, which I would like to share here. Another important thing is, you see, I told you, ananyata in bhakti. It is, ananyata means, I don't want it to be, diluted in any way. It's one-pointed. This comes in our life in so many ways. Let me here tell you a story from the life of Sanatana Goswami. You must have heard. He was a main disciple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya Dev sent him to Vrindavan for his spiritual practices. So there, Sanatana Goswami used to sit for hours and hours every day doing Krishna Nam. He built a kutiya. He would sit outside the kutiya and for long periods, extended hours every day, he would chant the name of the Lord. This, you see, their record was very high. Their standard is very high. Minimum 3 lakh names. So, a long time spent in spiritual practice. So, he used to do this and one day, it so happened, when he used to do this, he used to get totally absorbed and his face would light up, tears would flow down his eyes. He was a picture of perfection actually, even as a sadhak. So when one day what happened was, one rustic villager came that way. And he was a very simple man and he saw the saint sitting here and at once he fell at his feet. And then Sanatana Goswami just looked up like this and he said, well, Master, I want a boon from you. Please help me. I am in very difficult circumstances. And then Sanatan Goswami said, what do you want? He said, see, I very badly need money. I have something very important to do at home. He had to get his daughter married or something like that. I have no money. I know you are a saint. By just lifting your hands, you can grant me everything. Please, please give me money. Please arrange that I get some riches. And Sanatan Goswami just signed like this, not here, you won't get all this here. But he said, no, I know saints are capable of this. I won't leave you, please. Then Sanatan Goswami, after some time, he just pointed out to a rock which has fallen there, outside there. And he said, you lift it, just all by sign, lift it. And then he ran there, that man, and he lifted that rock. And under that, you know that Parashmani, philosopher's stone, it's supposed to master alchemistry, you can convert anything into gold. Now, this knowledge they had at that time, it seems. So that was lying there. It's such a precious thing, anything you touch it with, it will turn into gold. So he's thrown it like this outside his house, under a rock somewhere, and then take it and go. And then this man took it and very happy, he did on pranam, and he was going back home. Then it suddenly struck him on the way, you see this sadhu? Yes, he's got parashmani and he's thrown it outside his house, not even bothered, didn't even remember where it is. And when I'm asking for it, he's telling me, take it and go. What treasure has he got that this philosopher's stone, which is so precious to anybody, he's just thrown it out like this. What treasure has he got more than this? So he made his way back to Sanatan Goswami and fell at his feet and said, that's very beautiful. Abra Monyache. What is that? Je dhane koyar bhali, na karo manire mani. Means, having become rich by what treasure, you do not consider a philosopher's stone to be a treasure. Please give me a little of that treasure. I don't want this. And he threw it away. And he asked for bhakti. And then Sanatan Goswami gave him Krishna Naam. So you see, this is the path of the bhakta. You must understand the value of bhakti in life. There is nothing on par with it. If that comes, everything else will come. Jnana will come. Yoga will come, everything else follows bhakti. But this intense feeling for the Lord, this is the starting point. Please understand, human life is meant for this. And you are capable of it. You are perfectly capable of it. Those who have come to Thakur Maa Swamiji especially, a very powerful force, cosmic kundalini, you see Swamiji used to say, has been released in this age. We who have been blessed by coming into this force, into this field, we must utilize this opportunity. This is the time to move further and further, deeper towards God, God realization. And bhakti is the natural way towards this. Once we get this inkling, through our own efforts, you know, this is just shravan, what you are hearing now. Now it should become manan and nididhyasan by yourself. Once you get this deep sanskar within you, you will see the urgent need to do this. Just like how does the urgent need to earn money, to keep your family well, even like that, to move towards God. This should be felt as an urgent need. Once this comes into our life, you see everything will fall in place. This is the way Thakur answers our prayers. He will put everything into place so that more and more you can move towards Him. This is the nature of bhakti. If you love God, He will respond. In anything you give Him, He will give it to you 100-fold. So you give that bit of attention, you give that bit of devotion to Him, and He will rush towards you. So this naturally happens in the life of a devotee. In our own life, we should see to what extent we are able to do this practically. Everyday basis, I told you, do something in your homes, and it will build up. The thing is to be built every day. Then I can just give you one more incident and maybe close this session. We can take up question answers. Yes. One more incident is, okay, the nature of bhakti is such, I told you it is all absorbing. Another characteristic of bhakti is it is all consuming in a way. Which means you don't have to struggle with your desires and negativities and anger and hatred and lust in order to proceed in spiritual life. If you develop love for God, you naturally leave behind all of that. Pride, ego, it will not matter to you. Nothing matters if there is love in the heart, isn't it? Even in human love, you just heard it from Mataji. Nothing matters if love enters the heart. And if love of God enters the heart, there will be no place for anything else. This is again illustrated in the lives of these very saints, you know. There's another similar incident. Let me tell you this incident also. Vallabhacharya was the famous, they used to call him Mayavadin. He was a great philosopher of Advaita. And he was actually touring India, many places in India, defeating scholars and going around. And at that, at one point he came to Vrindavan. And he happened to meet this Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. And as soon as he saw them, he was filled with reverence and he felt that they had reached a certain height. So he offered to argue out their philosophies. He wanted a discussion on their philosophy. And they asked him his parichay. He said he was Vallabhacharya, very well known at that time. This is, I think, 16th century India. He was very well known at that time. And there was this constant discussion between the different philosophical schools, you see. That was the kind of debate. The only kind of, you can say, war which we had in India was a philosophical debate between the different philosophers. We never had any civil war or any other kind of war. It was mainly intellectual debate. So he came for that, and as soon as he offered to do this, the Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami actually told him, he told him, I declare I am defeated. Don't come to argue with me because I am absorbed in my spiritual practices. I have no time to argue with you. If you want, I will give you writing. And he wrote it on a piece of paper that Rupa Goswami defeated by Vallabhacharya, and he gave him the piece of paper. Now, Vallabhacharya also was very great. See, they were all yogis. So they could understand each other, and he said, I will not argue with you. So anyway, he took that paper, and as he was returning, one disciple of Rupa Goswami, who was Jiv Goswami, he was his nephew actually. He was coming, he was only a young lad, a teenager, but a great sadhak. He was coming from the opposite direction, and he bowed down to Vallabhacharya, recognized him, bowed down to him, and he said, did you meet my uncles? He said, yes, I met your uncle, and your uncle did not want to talk much with me because he is absorbed in the spiritual practices. Otherwise, I wanted a discussion on these philosophies. And but your uncle wrote and gave me, well, I am defeated by you, so I don't want to argue. Then he said, but Sanatana Goswami, he is Shetu Jnaner Sagar. He is the ocean of knowledge. He could have done this with you. But anyway, I am his student, and if you want, you can argue with me. So defeating me is equal to defeating him, and I am one of his students only. So Vallabhacharya said, okay, let's argue it out. And then the argument between the two philosophies started, Dvaita and Advaita. Then it went on for a long time, and Jiva Goswami managed to defeat Vallabhacharya in argument. And he was very happy, delighted. He was a young boy. Very delighted. And Vallabhacharya bowed down to him and he said, now I understand the greatness of your gurus. How great they must be. Having such a philosophy, still they are not bothered about proving its might. They are only absorbed in its states. He said that as he left, and Jiva Goswami very happily, in a very delighted mood, went and told Rupa Goswami that, you know what happened? Vallabhacharya was returning and I argued with him and I defeated him. And they became red in face, both uncles. And Sanatana Goswami said, how could you do this? This is also an abhiman for a Vaishnava. It doesn't befit you. Why should you defeat him? What glory is there in arguing about something? You must taste the love of God, or what we are, a jnani calls the state of pure awareness. You must taste it. The delight is in the taste, isn't it? The price of the pudding is in the eating. So what do you get by arguing and defeating this person and declaring to everyone you have defeated? You are not worthy of being our disciple. So go. You are not worthy of us. So then this boy was very unhappy, but he was sent away. And for a long time he was kept somewhere, do tapasya somewhere. And then after some time, I think Sanatan Goswami interceded on his behalf, and then, well, there was peace again. But whatever it is, you should see their bhav. The point is this, you have to dive into sadhana, get that ruchi, that taste for God. Once you get that taste for God, nothing else is going to matter. That's the most important thing. That is what is called prajna sanskar in Yoga Sutras, which means a solid dharana of what God is, the state of Godhood, the state of complete awareness and bliss. This is to be got in our minds through our sadhana. Then there's no question of should I love God. How can you not love Him? You are the Amsha, He is the Purna. You are part of Him. How can you not love that which you are a part of? But if you get this taste in your sadhana, then you will relate like this. You know? That is why this sadhana is everything in spiritual life. Whatever we are doing, wherever we are placed, everyday basis sadhana, getting absorbed in the divine, in whatever form, whether through your japa, whether through meditation, whether through karma yoga, whatever way, daily basis getting absorbed in the Lord. So very important to building spiritual life. If you keep doing this, after a few years, you will see that dharavahikam gataha sarvesha manovrittaya bhakti rityavi. It will become natural to you. The mind is rushing forth towards the divine. No struggles, no effort. Nobody's advice is required for you to do that. No willpower is being used. The mind is flowing, rushing towards God. So this is the state to be aimed at. It is our prayer on this day that Thakur Maa Swamiji bless us with these states. On an everyday basis, let bhakti enter into our lives. Let our lives become blessed by tasting this rushing flow of bhakti towards the Lord, and let human life achieve its fulfillment by realizing this state. This is my prayer on this blessed day. Thank you. Shall we have your questions now? I think we have a question answer session. Yes.
Mataji, when you were explaining about absorption to God, you also used it as a synonymous word, tyaga, renunciation.
Yes. See, how do they relate?
Yes.
Tyaga means giving up something. What is the purpose of giving up? See, make this clear. Don't think tyaga is sadhu's dharma. A person, tyag means running away from everything, wearing a gerua, not concerned with anything. That is not tyag. Tyag means basically emptying mind. If you empty your mind of unnecessary things, only the necessary things will remain. What are the necessary things? Your love of God, the deep reflections on God which you experience, your understanding of God, your ability to convert every karma into a yoga. These things will predominate in the mind if you leave out the unnecessary stuff. So tyag leads to absorption. Unless you empty your mind, you cannot fill it with God, isn't it? If it's cluttered with 101 things, unnecessary things, especially negative emotions, then you cannot have bhakti. So on an everyday basis, empty your mind. It's necessary. Many times people ask us, you know, in gatherings like this, how to overcome anger? Why do I feel hatred? Or I don't want to feel it, but I feel it. Sometimes these negativity modes come into our minds, isn't it? And they can carry you away also. So this is a great crisis. Your bhakti will just leave you if negativity predominates in the mind. So So the way to overcome this is, again, on an everyday basis, practice of yoga. Yoga is chittavritti nirodha. You are emptying mind on a regular basis, so that consciously I will bring only positivity into your mind. If there is cause for anger or hatred, only momentarily I will show that. You know, there's something called righteous indignation. Sometimes when your child is doing some mischief which is not good for the child, you have to show a little bit of anger, momentarily, not beyond that. So don't get into negative modes of mind at all. Through everyday practice, you can control all this. Then bhakti and all that becomes easier. Even at the workplace this happens, you know, sometimes somebody irritates you and carries away your emotions. Why should I invest my energies in something like this? So put a stop. Sadhana will control all this. I will move unidirectionally towards my goal. Everything else is a means, that's all.
Ishware anurag vishaye virag this. If you move towards east, you are separating from west. You are doing it.
Naturally.
Automatically that worldliness will become less.
Yes, anything else for discussion?
Masaji, both of you talked about Ananya Bhakti, and we find that in the Naradeva Bhakti Sutra also.
Yeah.
So that single-minded devotion or one-pointed devotion, does it happen at the Parabhakti level or even on the preparatory state?
Mataji?
In the beginning, we may start loving God with 10 other things, as Sri Ramakrishna tells. We can't love God with single-minded devotion from the beginning itself. Then everybody should give up everything and think of God. It can't be. So, you are loving many things, you add God also. Slowly that will replace the other things. Only in the Parabhakti level, you have no other thought. Ananya. Bhakti, but it even the lower bhakti, gradually it matures. Every love, it matures into the highest, the pure love. You learn. The more you sacrifice and the more you towards, you practice by practicing japa, meditation, prayer, your love and devotion increases, your attachment decreases towards world. Gradually your mind is fully attracted, it is. But when it is fully attracted, then it is the highest type of bhakti. In the beginning itself, it is not that we have no other thought, we have only one thought of God, we will all give up the world and things. That may not happen in the initial stage. It doesn't matter, we start where we are. You can think it is all God's samsar. When you are in samsar, it is Bhagavan's samsar, and everywhere work you are doing is for pleasing God only, not for any worldly fulfillment. With that attitude you can practice. When you have that Ananya Bhakti, then you realize God only. It's not God. Actually, you see God. Only one thought is there, no other thought. So God is God. But God tests many times, not so easy. So many tests we have to pass through, no?
Yes, anything else?
Mataji, if no one else has questions. You said whatever we do, like even engineering, is a, remember that it's a means to Him. Right? Sometimes we feel the work is so complex, we need, there is absolutely no thought of God there at all.
No, usually how we talk of practice in Karma Yoga is, see, when you are when you are performing the work, there cannot be another thought there, running parallelly. You have to be totally concentrated on the work. But before you begin the work, know it to be your karma yoga, your yoga through karma. And while you are doing it, mentally keep offering it to God. When it finishes, completely offer it to God once more and pray that this is my offering to you today. So like this you can practice.
Two parallel thoughts
you cannot. It is very difficult. So concentrate completely on the work, but the fruit of that work should go to God. So it's equivalent to the work going to God. Isn't it?
Ma, is it yoga karma kaushalya?
Yeah, yes. So then it will be yoga karma
kaushalya.
Wholeheartedly you should pray that whatever the effect of this work, Lord, I offer at your feet, because this is my, now this is my way to you. You have a 9-to-5 job. Most of the time you are working. So this is, you have to convert it into yoga now. There is no other way.
You can combine karma yoga and bhakti yoga. You have to combine.
As seva you can offer it. This is my service to you. See, the final output of your work, it is doing good to so many, isn't it? So it is in a way you are worshipping God in all those people. See, the software you are creating, it's bringing so much of solace and joy to so many people. So it is a form of seva. Now you consciously convert it into a yoga. Take it like that.
You are supposed to chant your mantra continuously.
Yeah.
And if you are working in a job like what Nitya said, how do you chant your mantra while you are working?
No, when you are, especially, see, today's knowledge society, you are doing purely intellectual work.
Yes.
You cannot run on two parallel lines. You cannot be chanting the mantra and yet doing work. You can't do that. So, only thing you can do is, you make the work itself into an offering, like a mantra. After all, mantra chanting also, it's an offering to the Lord, isn't it? When you chant the mantra, mentally we are asked to imagine you are like a flower, you are giving it at the feet of the Lord, or meditating on the Lord, like that. You make the work an offering at the feet of the Lord. And at the time of spiritual practice, you can do your intense mantra japa. Even if 15 minutes of intense japa is there, your every work will become karma yoga. So, Vivekananda once said, if you weep 10 minutes for God, you will not know where you are in the next 3 months. The impact it leaves on your mind is like that. So, you must do it with intensity. That's the essential thing. Committed, sincere intensity. That's why prayer is the best possible spiritual practice, you know. When you pray, you can't be insincere. You're asking for something. Even if you do not want it, you are wanting to want it, isn't it? Many of us are actually not wanting, we are wanting to want. Please see this. Because unless you know the thing, you can't want it. Now, if somebody says, Lord grant me samadhi, the Lord grants you samadhi, you will be simply shocked. But if you are wanting samadhi for a long period of time, you get prepared for samadhi, and then it enters your life, you are able to absorb it. So many of us are wanting to want many of these spiritual things. So prayer brings you very frankly into encounter with God, face to face with God. So use prayer as a powerful tool. Everyday basis, if you keep asking for certain things, your whole system gets prepared to receive them and they will come into your life. He will give you at the right time. Many times we are not prepared for what we are asking for. You know that Hriday asking for Bhava Samadhi? You must have read. He kept asking and asking, aching for it. And Thakur told him, no, your body can't take it. Don't ask for it. So it will come at the right time. Prepare yourself for it. And you must ask like that. And it will come.
At what point you would bring Gyanayoga in, or do you start first with Gyanayoga, then you will move to the bhakti?
See, for the bhakti yogi, the bhakti is the ultimate thing. For the jnana yogi, the experience of pure awareness is the ultimate thing. So these are two standard paths, two highways, you can say, towards God. They crisscross. Not that the jnani has no bhakti and the bhakta has no jnana. But it depends on what exactly you want in spiritual life. What do you want? Do I want devotion to the Lord? Then I would want devotionally absorptive states. That will be my aim. Or do I want, who am I? Tomorrow we'll discuss this. Many of us have both tendencies. So then how do we proceed? We want this also and that also. Not that they are separate. You see, the Lord whom we are loving, worshipping, His state is Brahman. Isn't it? Look at Thakur's life. I told you, his all three pictures of Thakur are in Samadhi. The state of that mind is perpetually to be in God consciousness. So unless you know what is God consciousness, how will you love that state? So the thing is, what exactly you want in spiritual life, let's be clear about. Some people want only a sagun aspect of Brahman. They want only God with infinite divine attributes. So that is also available. You see, Hinduism is such a broad thing. Anything you want, you will have. You get. You are not cutting the everyone down to the same size. We don't do that in Hinduism. So, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, everything crisscrosses. You use everything to move towards the goal.
Mataji, you mentioned about prayers.
Yes.
So, in Swamiji, in one place, he mentioned that prayers actually enhances the willpower.
Yes.
How does it do?
Very good. See, when you keep on praying, what exactly are you doing? You are creating solid neural connections. Yes. Vritti, if repeated, becomes sanskar. Please know this. It's an important psychological law in the Patanjali Yoga Sutras. If you repeat vrittis, they will become sanskars. So they solidify into what you want, which is willpower, which is willing. If you keep on repeating vrittis, I'll give you a simple example. Now look at this Swamiji scripture here. Suppose I am not able to meditate on Swamiji. If I just keep looking at the picture, I am creating vrittis in my mind. It becomes equivalent to meditation. A solid sanskar of Swamiji will be created in my mind. And my will move towards that. So this is the way to create sanskars. You must constantly reflect on a particular thing. This is the power of thinking, you see, thought. So thought is a very powerful tool to go into very deep states, yogic states. Just repeating vrittis will create sanskar and strengthen your will. Try it and see. If you don't give enough thought, you can't do this. That's why I say all that you require to augment your spiritual progress is inbuilt within you. It is scattered just now in various things. Supreme love is right within you. It is given to many, very many things. Now gather it. Supreme concentration is in you. It is divested into very many things. Now gather it. It's like that. Spiritual life is nothing but a gathering in of all your powers.
Mataji, I have a question.
Yeah.
See, you give a beautiful lecture and we try to absorb and try to follow it. We try to read and emulate at least a theoretical level. But why do people, knowing this is good, still go back into negativity and you know, try to, I mean, all the negative attributes like jealousy, control, egoism, why people know that that's not good. We listen to you, we know what is good, we know the discrimination.
Yeah.
Why do we go back and do that?
The thing is, no, emotions, the nature of emotion is, they will not listen to any rational explanation. That is the nature of emotions. this is the danger of emotions also. It's a good question what she is asking. It is very good to be emotional and let your energies flow towards the Lord, but you must know emotions have no rational basis. They aren't even available to logical understanding of. This is the danger of emotions. So what you should do is, that's why now in our present stage we must combine bhakti and jnana. You must use your rational intellect to convince your mind not to get into negativity modes. If you just allow emotions free play, there will be a little positive, a little negative. A little love for God and a little jealousy. A little more love for God and a little more hatred. This is how they proceed. So now I will so fix my will that I create first of all the right sanskars required for spiritual life. This is the most important thing. By consciously concentrating on the right things in life, on, as I told you, on say the life of Thakur Maha Swamiji, on good books, good literature, on elevating talks, by concentrating on all this, you create the right vrittis in your mind. Keep aside a little of those vrittis which are meaningless. You see, I don't want to say this, but because this is such an intense group, I will tell you, today's media will keep bombarding you with all kinds of images. If once your mind starts flowing only in that direction, you will lose upon all this. Bhakti, jnana and all this. So be aware of this danger. Conscious thought should go only towards these things. Then what happens? Vrittis are generated in the mind. As you go on repeating them, sanskars are generated. These are the ones which are actually going to hold your spiritual life. This is the groundwork. Once this is created, then you can be sure, you can be assured, a deep peace will descend in your heart. You know your mind will not go the wrong way. It will not give in to negativities. Even if anger arises, you know you are in control. You are not going to burst forth. So this form of control naturally comes into your life. But if I have not consciously worked enough on creating the right sanskars through spiritual practice, through everyday worship, by directing my gaze towards my goals. You know, many times, especially today's youngsters, I work with a lot of these IITians. And for them it's a perennial problem, too much of negativity being bombarded on them through media, through their peer group, through all this. And they don't want to go into it, but there is no way out because we have removed religion from their life through our secular systems. We have, you see, that had a purpose, but then it went a bit too far and we got confused. Now we have created such a secular environment, there's no touch of devotion and religion to today's teenagers in many schools and colleges, isn't it? It's a natural problem. I'm sure it's there here also. So by this what happens is that positive influence of religion is not falling on the mind. Devotion is absent. Now you have not created the sanskars enough to have an elevated life. So naturally the mind is constantly going to negativity loops. And then you are suffering depression, anger, all sorts of things, and then they have counselors who give them further trouble. So, the primary problem is this: you are not inundated with the positivity that religion brings into your life. That's why I told you this is the greatest gift you can give your children. The great solace of perfect purity, perfect commitment. Family, you know, that is the very basis of man's multidimensional development. In the family, all this has to come. That's the primary thing. If it comes into the family, tomorrow's societies will be very balanced, very mature. If it doesn't come into the family today, if we are not even able to keep the family together due to all these forces, then we are going to have a really miserable social setup. There can be no doubt about that. So let's begin from the beginning. Let's begin from the family. Bringing these sanskars into the family is your most important duty. Not just what you will provide for your children by means of their education and all that, but what sanskars you bring into your home. What you enforce on them at that little age, that they have to do that so that their life will be towards this. This is very important. Create the right sanskars, negativity will not come into your mind. In Bhagavad Gita, so beautifully it is put, Yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate nadikantadha yasmin sthito na dukhe na gurunapi vichalyate. Even great sorrow cannot conquer you if you have created all these solid sanskars of bhakti and jnana. You get the superlative happiness which cannot compare with anything else. So sorrow will not matter to you. Anything negative coming into your life, it just doesn't affect you. Not that sorrow doesn't come, it doesn't affect you.
So does that include we will not avoid interaction with people who are
negative?
Yeah.
See, in our stage, we need to avoid people who are of a negative type. If it is impossible to do that, at least you can distance yourself to the mind. Maybe physically you can't distance yourself. In the workplace you have to work together. But you can distance yourself mentally. Huh? Otherwise what will happen is they will just draw you into the vortex of their emotions. So that alertness should be there, mental alertness. I will protect my spiritual life, my sadhana at all costs, because I know that is the thing in life. You must prioritize. Yes, anything else?
Mataji would like to say something.
Questions, please.
Thank you, Mataji.
Thank you.
We'll stop here. Huh?